It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Monday, June the 23rd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, coming to you here on this Monday morning after the Mets fall to the Phillies on Sunday Night Baseball. An atrocious week of baseball, a stressful week of baseball, a cranky week of baseball, and I know a week of baseball that's put you in a mood where you're probably questioning all the vibes that have been built up over the first nearly 2.5 months of the season. I'm sure you're questioning some of them, but we're here to dissuade all your fears. And joining me in just a little bit, I had a chance to catch up with a show favorite before the Mets took on the Phillies last night. Ernie Dove, our buddy Ernie Dove, who covers the minor leagues, who's always in touch with what's going on up and down the Mets system, has started talking to some of the players that are on the current big league roster before we even knew they existed, and recently got a shout-out from Mets owner Steve Cohen. Ernie Dove, that Ernie Dove, will join us in just a little bit. But I want to start out by setting up the show. So, like I had said, and I had come on the premium content to everybody and put the losing streak in perspective. And then obviously the Mets broke the streak on Saturday in a big way and then fell back on Sunday. And it's a 1-5 awful road trip. And what's even more annoying, if you throw in the three Rays games, that very easily, not that they would have been much better, because most games they pitched poorly, they didn't hit, they didn't really put any pressure on the opposing pitcher at all. And the offense, when you talk about the offense making up for some of the regression in pitching, I mean, not even close. But even with that, the Mets, 1-8 in their last nine. And they should really at least have a couple more wins. That would have made it still a bad stretch, but not where it is. And that's what's annoying, because they gave away some very winnable games. One against Tampa. One against Atlanta. Atlanta one really got the road trip off to the wrong foot. We talked about that on the premium content, the annoyingness of Alvarez's defense, and he'll be a big topic, of course, today. And then obviously the bridge to the bullpen and what that has transformed into. Now, before I get to that and the theme of the show and really what myself and Ernie are going to be talking about when he comes on in just a few, I mean, the first thing I think this past week of baseball did was give you an indication of how the rest of the year is going to go. I mean, we all were hoping, and maybe up until Senga pulled his hamstring, we're all hoping that the Mets were getting themselves into this lane where they were playing really well. They were playing at a high level. We knew there was some holes they needed to fill between now and the July 31st trade deadline. We knew that the pitching wasn't going deep enough, but we knew that it was giving you a really good 18 outs. And yeah, the bridge was shaky, but it was doable now, even with its overuse, and maybe with some of the shuttling of some of the arms, you could mitigate some of that. And obviously you have Diaz, this elite closer, who they really haven't gotten to use very much over the past week. When you don't have leads, you don't really use your closer. So he's had a bit of a vacation. But what we saw this past week, we saw a Mets team that we thought, okay, they're going to be at like a 3-5 game lead over the Phillies. The Phillies haven't really been playing that well. And the Phillies moved to the first place basically playing .500 baseball because the Mets have been so bad. It's not like the Phillies ran past the Mets and took the division. The Mets are just playing, they're playing 62 Mets level. We like to use that term a lot. So what turned into, hey, we're comfortably in the wild card. We're going to be comfortably 3-5 games ahead in the division. The regression of who they are, some of the warts of the starting pitching in terms of it coming back down to earth a little bit. It's a bit of a wild swing. They're not as bad as they've been over the last week, and they certainly probably weren't as good. But even with the length and the overuse of the bullpen and some of the warts of the bridge with the Garretts and the Brazenbonds and sometimes what, they're not consistent in high leverage. They struggle against left-handed batters. And then needing the offense, as we talked about a week ago, to step up a little bit and do their thing with the young players not progressing, not contributing in any kind of way, it turns you into what you are now, a really good team competing for first place that's probably going to be in a dogfight with the Phillies this year, similar to how they were in a dogfight for the division a couple of years ago with the Braves. The hope is that that three-game lead in the wild card will balloon a little bit, that Mets will play at a higher level than the Brewers and the Giants and the Padres and the teams that are in that muck, the Cardinals, you could throw them in there. And hopefully you're not going to get a situation where this stretch or these Achilles heels that either need to be worked out as the regression levels out and they get back to who they were, the starters, and the bridge to the bullpen, maybe it's going through its own patch, and then it flattens out a little bit and puts you in a position where over the next month you could, you know, stabilize and play at a somewhat more that 600-plus baseball level you were playing at prior to that, and then you go out and hopefully get the reinforcements at the deadline. Some of the things I'm hearing is the Mets will be aggressive, that I'm wrong, that I'm taking the wrong approach. It's a little too early for me to start saying what names I'm hearing. I don't like to get into the rumor mill, but there are some names that are being thrown out there that are not as obvious as what is being reported or thrown about as speculative reporting by the mainstream media. That, as things get closer, I think that what you see now is what's going to be the rest of the summer into the fall. And that's the Mets and the Phillies battling for a division. Debatable about, I mean, obviously you want to stay out of the three-game wild card, but the variability of all of it sometimes makes you wonder, especially, you know, depending on how the division records finish out. You finish with a third division record, you're going to be in a wild card anyway. There's really not much of a benefit sometimes, I think, and depending on, it's almost like you're ranking these teams one through six at this point. So, you know, the Mets will go back and forth with the Phillies for the division. Hopefully they could stay comfortably ahead in the wild card. It'd be nice get a little revenge against Atlanta this week. Atlanta coming to play at the Mets at Citi Field. And then obviously the Mets go to Pittsburgh. So the schedule lightens up a little bit this week. But look, the Braves are the Braves. I know Chris Sale's down. They're still the Braves. They get up for the Mets. They still have really good starting pitching left over. And the Pirates, you go to Pittsburgh. I don't know what the matchups are going to be. It's a week away. But those are games that you get a Skeens. You get some of these guys, Mitch Keller. They're one-run games. And anybody could win a one-run game. So that's where you are. But the main disappointment, and I think the main theme of the show, and really what Ernie Dove and I are going to talk about, and it goes to the news that came yesterday morning, way before the Mets took on the Phillies in the finale of the road trip, and something that I was talking about a week earlier and really started to accentuate after the awful defensive boneheaded play that happened in Atlanta. And then during the game on Saturday night, I was tweeting about how disappointing and how unacceptable Alvarez not blocking a slider that Griffin Canning threw, but the effort, the mechanics of how he just tried to one-hand a pitch with a runner on third base. Fundamentally, as a catcher, since the beginning of time, you want to make sure that you bury those pitches. You don't allow the runner on third to score. And look, it didn't mean anything in a game that wound up being 11-4, but at that time, especially before you got into the late innings where the Mets blew it open, that could have been a big run. And that was a run that extended actually a Phillies lead at that point. So, you know, when you see those kind of efforts and you see the hollow statistics that came from Alvarez with the garbage time home run, and I know he did get an infield single earlier that helped a rally, but still, when you look at that, the important things that he didn't do, the garbage time home run that maybe, you know, what a guy who's working on his swing gets him to thinking, oh, I'm back. I think it's a reminder to an Alvarez that, you know, being a big leaguer, being a contributing big leaguer to a championship team isn't about garbage time home runs, isn't about stats on the baseball reference page. It's about those things. Of course, you want a productive player, but it's about doing a lot of little things, especially when you're a catcher. And, you know, give Pat Ragazzo over at SI credit doing some reporting. I didn't realize how awful his framing statistics have been. You and I could look with our eyes and see how bad his blocking of pitches have been. Everybody, you know, I've been making jokes on X. I know I get a little emotional. You know, the fan in me comes out during the game about the goofy smile and how annoyed I am. But I mean, a lot of it is at a point where, and I think my annoyance with what I've always been talked about over the last couple of years, the baby Mets, because I've been very critical of them, is that maybe this is more of a generation of fans. and Alvarez has been the poster child for it, is that we sit here and we act as if the Mets are the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Rockies or the Marlins, and there's a scholarship here where, well, these are young kids. He's only 23. He needs time to develop. He hit 25 home runs 2 years ago. All these things you hear, all these fans that don't want to ever, ever admit that maybe the prospect isn't good enough. And by the way, back in the day, prospects didn't just get handed starting jobs to figure it out indefinitely. They sometimes sat on the bench. You know, I talked about Dave Magan, a top Mets prospect in the 80s, for 3 years between, you know, Keith Hernandez retiring and moving his way out of the organization, and then some question marks by the organization whether he could be an everyday first baseman. Some of it were unfair. He sat on the bench and was a part-time player and sub in and did pretty well, a lot better than these guys have done when he did sub in when Hernandez was hurt towards the end of his career. And he had to earn his position. He had to earn his starting job. And when he did, he almost won a batting title. And maybe it stunted his career a little bit. He was playing with a championship team with championship-level aspirations. And sometimes that's just part of how the cookie crumbles for a young player. But you find a way to contribute. I know I'm going way back in the Wayback Machine, bringing up a name like Dave Magadan. But if you go back and you look at what Dave Magadan did in part-time work, and then look at what a Brett Beatty, a Ronnie Mauricio, a Francisco Alvarez is doing, where they are expected to be, at the very least, component pieces to a championship club where they play good defense, they do the little things, and they give you enough offense. Look, if each one of them, even though league average would be disappointing, and I'll take Vientos out of this, who actually, from a war perspective, is a negative war this year because his defense has been so horrible and his offense has been less than spectacular and maybe a little hollow. You know, they are not even giving you league average anything. I mean, maybe Beatty with the glove is the biggest positive from this group. So here we are. They, you know, started in 2022 with a cup of coffee from Beatty and a real tiny cup of coffee with Alvarez. And even Vientos was on that team. It morphed into a chaotic 23, a breakout by Vientos in 24, regression by Beatty, and a total, you know, breakout in 23 by Alvarez, and a total regression pretty much since the second half of 2023. He had a nice start to his career, getting called up early in 23. And you thought, here's a guy that's going to be a 35-40 home run guy behind the plate, is framing the ball like, you know, getting rave reviews from a Max Scherzer Hall of Fame pitcher. And yeah, they are, you know, maybe not the best defensively, but that kind of an arm will make up for it. And he'll work, because you heard about the work ethic and the attitude, and you still hear about that, you know, work on the other things. But in somewhere along the way, and I think the first real warning sign, everyone gets mad at Jeremy Barnes and Eric Chavez because of the Mets offense, but a couple of years ago there's a quote that's been floating its way around the internet where Chavez basically said, I don't think he's all that good in his own way, and he's a lot to work on. And it made me wonder, you know, you could have that positive attitude, you could have this smile, you could be coachable, but deep down, if you're not doing the things that people are telling you to be successful, and look, here's a guy, me, who said to you a week ago, hey, you know, it's optional for the players to use the hitting coach. And guess what? If you don't want to use the data or the philosophy of the organization, at some point, if you produce, they're not going to care. Okay, they'll trade you if they feel it's a problem. But if you produce and you produce because you did it your way, nobody's going to care as long as those are the sustainable results. But if it's not working, if your way's not working, if you're not producing, then guess what, big guy? You better start thinking about what the organization's saying, or figure out why all the things that we keep hearing you're working on aren't getting better. Maybe it's because you're not that good. Let's face facts. And maybe it's a little too soon. Mauricio was out for a year. Here's the facts. Alvarez is terrible on both sides of the ball. He shows nothing to indicate that he's even really a good bat. I mean, he could certainly be in the big leagues with a team, but he's nowhere near a catcher that you feel comfortable with on a team trying to win a division and go deep in postseason right now. Hayden Senger is such a better fit because of his defense. And, you know, maybe he's not even as good enough hitter as Tomas Nido was. But give me that defense and give me the defense of Torrens. And apparently the pitchers, just for the metrics, are doing better with Torrens. And that's gold behind the plate. You don't want to hit. You want to be Charlie O'Brien, another dated reference behind the plate. I don't care. I mean, obviously I'd love for you to be somewhat passable and not an automatic out. But in a deeper lineup, which right now, because of these kids not contributing, is not a deep lineup, nobody's going to care. Beatty, the defense at third is great. That's replicatable somewhere else. The only reason he's even not in the same disappointing category as Alvarez is he's shown progress this year. He's made tremendous strides on defense, give him credit, and he's popped 8 home runs, and he's had some impressive home runs. But he's not done anything differently. He's hitting 208. He's nowhere better of a hitter than he was 2 years ago, just hitting more for more power. He always hit for power. The defense has, and look, you want to say, hey, you need him. You need him to stick around on the bench, play a couple positions, be versatile, pop a home run here or there, coming for defense for Vientos. Sure, I can live with that. That's not a starting player. By the way, you could probably get a veteran to do that, a lot better. A lot better. And then Mauricio, I mean, look, the guy can't hit a breaking pitch. He's a mistake fastball hitter. Those guys usually don't last very long in the big leagues. And Vientos, I mean, we have a sample size of success. We have Vientos doing well in the deep end of the pool of the postseason against a championship team like the Dodgers. So I'm not ready to write him off. We don't know if he's a DH or he could even, I mean, his defense at third is falling off big time. Now, whether that's because of the offense not being the same way, I don't know. Can't answer that. But at this point, he's a hollow offensive player. He's a guy that's profiling more as a lower end of the order, a seven hitter. And if the defense continues to be as bad as what it's been, he's a DH. And if you're going to be a DH, you got to hit a hell of a lot better than the way he's hitting. Let me tell you that. And there's a value. If he turns out to be a DH that pops 20 to 25 home runs to 250, 260, crushes lefties, does okay against righties, I mean, that's okay. That I could at least live with. That's component. I mean, look, they probably need more from Vientos than component. But if Vientos comes back, stabilizes the defense a little bit, hits left-handed pitching, goes back to maybe being somewhere in between what he was last year and as bad as he was at the beginning of the year, you could definitely live with that on this current Mets club. It's a little disappointing. You expected more. But ultimately, look, guys, this Alvarez demotion is a message as well, in my opinion, to all these kids. Like, it ain't a scholarship year. This isn't Pittsburgh. You are not guaranteed a spot. If you have options, I don't care if you're a top 100 prospect or you were the top Mets prospect. None of that matters. The 25 home runs 2 years ago do not matter. They do nothing for this team. The potential that everyone says they see, which, by the way, you're not a scout, I'm not a scout, we could see some of the things that go on, I could see a lot of the negative, but you don't know, truly, that he has all this talent other than the fact that he was ranked high and Keith Law told you that. Because I don't see anything. I haven't seen anything out of Alvarez in a long time. All I've heard is, hey, good to throw pitches through by Max Scherzer, long gone. You could see the good arm. You could occasionally see the power. Who can't remember that big, long home run off the Orioles on a mistake fastball, by the way? I think it was a 3-0 or 3-1 count. I mean, look, we know that Vientos, we know that Alvarez, we know that Beatty, we know that Mauricio could hit mistake pitches from good or bad hurlers. But how many, good pitchers don't make those mistakes? Yeah, you could hit a bomb off of Zach Wheeler into the upper tank, but how many times is Zach Wheeler going to make that mistake? How many times are you going to get a 3-0 meatball from a bad reliever on the Orioles to win a ball game, Alvarez? And it's a shame because he has shown flashes. I mean, the big hit in Texas last year, I think it was off of David Robertson. The home run I mentioned off the Orioles. I mean, at times, and even when he first came back up, and I want to be fair, too, to Alvarez. Because, I mean, I should have mentioned this earlier. Guy had the Hammond injury. I told you guys that's an injury that saps a lot of your wrist strength, even when it heals. And that's where all the offense comes from. I think Alvarez is way more lost than just a sore wrist or a return from injury. Doesn't help. His approach stinks. I think the word emotional hitter was used on X, and I agree with that. Okay, he's had a baby. That certainly has taken its toll. The whole personal life, yes, it's his job. Yes, he has to compartmentalize. That's what you have to do when you're a ball player. But let's be fair. The guy just had a baby. There's a lot of life-changing things that come with that. Those of the audience could appreciate that and understand that. And certainly it's going to affect them. So let's be fair to him. But the other reality is the train keeps moving. Nobody's going to say, eh, keep Alvarez in the big leagues because he's, you know, coming back from a hammock injury and he just had a kid. They're not. Not with a team that looks at its roster and says, I want to win. And right now, and the theme of the show is net negative. Those guys are net negatives. You have a and I didn't talk much about Acuña. At least Acuña, with the legs and the defense, the versatility, I could justify him on the roster. I've never been a guy who thought, and I think the only reason people thought he was better than he was going to be is the 1 week last year when Lindor was hurt, where he came up and, you know, jumped into a couple of mistake fastballs, and played really good for a week, albeit against some of that was garbage time against a second division club, the Nats, but played big against the Phillies in that weekend series, a series that the Mets needed, and played well. Okay, the only other reason they think that he's going to be good is because of his brother, and he ain't his brother. But you can at least justify him on the roster with the legs and the versatility, and he's a really good defensive player. I mean, Beatty, you know, is playing good at third, but I mean, how many? You can't have the you know, when you only have so many backups, you can't be littering them with just glove guys. And Mauricio, there's nothing. There's nothing right now that he warrants a spot on the roster. Now, if Jesse Winker's around, probably one of these guys is not there, probably Mauricio, so the injuries are playing into it. And when you start to look at what the Mets need, and I talked about this earlier in the week, you know, certainly maybe a veteran versatile infielder that could come in for defensive Vientos, i.e. What Beatty's doing, that would be something. You know, I don't like to, and this is not a rumor, I don't like to throw names out there because I don't know their availability. And, you know, I'm looking real quick while we're here on, he's due a lot of money the next 2 years. But you know who would really be a nice bat? He's having a horrible year, but at least he's got pop and he's a really good glove. But Ryan McMahon of the Rockies is an interesting name. He could start at third. He moves Vientos to DH. He could play some defense. Maybe you get him out of Colorado. No, he strikes out a lot, but, you know, who knows? I mean, at this point, Beatty's not giving you what McMahon is giving you defensively, or, you know, even the potential. You know, he's actually had years. I mean, he's not a league average hitter, but he hit you 25 home runs, driving, you know, 85, 90 runs, lefty bat, you know, could play multiple positions, has played second base, has played first base. I mean, that's a guy that, I mean, look, if he morphs into a bat, I know it's $16 million a year, is a lot of money for a guy who, you know, gives you what McMahon gives you. It goes to show you with McNeil making similar money, how much of a steal McNeil is. You guys all hate him. I mean, think about this. Think about how many times people wanted to throw McNeil off the island because you had Beatty or you had Acuña. Think about the talk with Pete Alonso and the thought that the Mets could make Pete walk, throw Vientos at first, and Beatty at third. Could you imagine without Alonso in this lineup? Because right now it's a lineup that's been largely carried by three guys. And a little bit of Nimmo, and obviously McNeil has joined the party. So there's five guys. So you got four dead spots. Catcher, we can live with a little bit because they're doing other things. But you got three dead spots. So three out of nine innings, you know you ain't getting nothing out of those guys. Imagine this lineup if Pete walked. Imagine this lineup if the GM listened to the dopey fans and just gave McNeil away because he had the kids. And look, I've never been on that train. I mean, I remember when there was talk by the fans about giving Alvarez an extension. I was like, whoa, after 2023. Guy hit a buck and change in the second half. Nobody talked about it because they were too busy with the sell-off and Buck being fired and the president of baseball operations search. But Alvarez has been bad for 2 years plus. He was awful in the playoffs. Yeah, he had an okay, you know, nice game five at Citi Field, but he was awful. If I remember game two, the game that they wound up winning, I mean, they had a chance to really blow that game open, and he stranded a ton of runners on base. He's been bad for a long time. There was talk in September. Go back to the newsletter. It's substack.com/@talkingmetsog. Yours truly said, I think Lourdes Torrens should start down the stretch because at least you know he's going to control the running game. He's going to be good behind the plate. This is not a new conversation. And, you know, for those that think this, you know, he'll go down, fix his swing 7 to 10 days, I don't know about that. Because it's not going to be about the numbers. It's going to be, and I think he got sent down as much for that wild pitch on Saturday than anything else. Because I was a little surprised, because I figured, did the wild pitch, got a couple of hits. The Mets are just not going to, because there's always the debate about the psyche of a player. I mean, it is interesting how the timing. They didn't wait till they left Philadelphia. They did it in between a Saturday night game and a Sunday night game. Gave them time to get Senga up here from wherever. I don't know where the Syracuse Mets were playing. So they had it in their mind. It was a itchy trigger finger. And they do it after he hits a bomb of a home run. You heard that. Well, you will hear that. I have that as one of the highlights that we're playing today. But right now, the Mets are where they are because, yes, we understood there was going to be some regression to the mean. Even on Reed Garrett and Oscar Brazenbaum, they were way overperforming their peripheral metrics. And the starting pitches as well. And the lack of length was a problem. But you figured they could work their way through it. And the way that you figured they worked their way through it is that with the regression on one end, you would see a normalization on the offensive end. And you've seen that with Soto. You've seen when Nimmo come back to to reality. McNeil joining the party. But none of the kids have been competent. League average we're looking at. Slightly above with the bat. They've been bad. Significantly below league average bad. Striking out a lot. Long stretches. Lack of productivity in the outs they do make. And guess what? Those are bad hitters. If their name is Joey Wendell instead of Brett Beatty, you're all over them. Or if the name is Brian Schneider instead of Francisco Alvarez, you're all over them. If the name is Jordani Valdespin instead of Ronnie Mauricio, you're all over them. But because there are these prospects that you've heard about since the beginning of time, they're young. Give them time to develop. Develop what? What do you see? I see a defensive third baseman in Beatty. I see a 4A catcher in Alvarez. I see a guy who's going to be out of the game. He'll have a spot because he can only hit a fastball, but he'll be out of the game before you know it. Ronnie Mauricio, those guys are a dime a dozen. You know how many guys you could sign in international free agents or off a college campus that could hit a fastball, a mistake fastball, and look good doing it with a good body? Game historically has been littered with guys like that. Glenn Bragg. Look at a guy named Glenn Bragg, Bragg, Reds. A guy like Glenn Allen Hill had some good seasons, beautiful body. Couldn't play the field and mistake hitter with a fastball. Beautiful looking body. Glenn Bragg, beautiful body. Couldn't play. I mean, having a good, beautiful swing and exit velo, all that makes sense and works if you make contact and know how to work counts. And when a guy like Peter Fairbanks comes and throws you sliders, you start to recognize them and make him think twice because you actually foul one off and just miss it. Maybe I'm being unfair on these kids, but again, the Mets are not here like the Pirates developing. They're trying to win a championship. They're in the deep end of the pool. They have no time for BS, and these kids have been nothing but BS all year. And Vientos is on the peripheral of the BS now. He'll be back this week. We'll see where that goes. It'll be interesting to see what move they make. It looks like he's close to returning. I don't know if they'll wait for Pittsburgh. Maybe they'll even activate him tonight. So by the time you listen to this, it's old news. But, to me, the net negative of these kids, Alvarez being sent down is only the beginning. Another one probably be sent down when Vientos is back. And I'll tell you what. Don't be surprised that in about 30 days, they ain't part of the organization. Now, you're selling low, but at some point, the options will go away. You won't have a chance to shuttle them. It might behoove the Mets at this point, unless there's something I'm missing. If they could get pieces for these guys that will allow them to win in 2025, and maybe pieces that could contribute into 2026 and maybe 2027, got to think about it. Alvarez, you're going to figure things out. Beatty, Mauricio, Acuna, I don't know about it. Alvarez at least is worth, you're not going to trade him now. Even if he's down in the minor leagues. I mean, this is Dom. By the way, guys, this is Dom Smith level bad. This is a lot. The only difference is I didn't think Dom Smith could have a play. There was never an indication he could play. He had one good stretch. Alvarez, he has never shown he could play. But with the position and some of the other things he's done at the premium position that catching is, you want to be careful with that. So we'll see. But that's where you're at. you're at a point where we don't have time for growing pains and goofiness and nonsense and BS and guys that quite simply don't look like they have a feel of how to get better. And that's scary, especially at the plate. At least, you know, Beatty, just when you thought he was turning around. And I know with Mauricio, it's a small sample size, but things like that, the lack of recognition of pitches and how foolish he's looking on breaking pitches. I don't know. Those are usually big, big, big red flags. All right, you've heard enough from me. You probably want to hear what Ernie Dove has to say. He's probably going to put me in my place. Ernie loves prospects. Like I said, he's a guy who's down in Florida, spends a lot of time in St. Lucie, talks to these kids, talks to coaches, does the reporting and the research that a lot of the mainstream don't do anymore on the minor leagues, and could give us an interesting perspective and maybe balance out my criticisms and my impatience and my lack of optimism about the Mets, the baby Mets, the young Mets, the kids that currently are on the 26-man roster. All right, let's take a quick break. Ernie Dove and more talking Mets right after this.
Drilled by Alvarez. No. It's a righty this time. It's a solo shot.
We are not part of history.
Oh, the seventh solo job for the Mets tonight. It's thrown back onto Citizens Bank Park's field. And Alvarez, who's been trying to bust out of a slump, hits his first home run in a couple of weeks.
We're back, and what a perfect day. I actually had a chance to schedule this a couple of days ago. We had no idea that there'd be big news about Francisco Alvarez, but you heard me talk about Alvarez and some of the young players in the Open. I'm coming to you with this next guest pregame before the Mets take on the Phillies for Sunday Night Baseball. It's not the good, it's the great Ernest Dove, at Ernest Dove on X. Baseball reporter. He has the Dove Report, the New York Mets Dove Report on YouTube. You guys know him for covering prospects. And even the great Steve Cohen says you should be following him. So if you're listening to this show, and for some reason in this humble abode, you haven't heard of Ernest Dove, which I doubt, start following him. Ernie, pleasure to have you on. It's been a while. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I guess since the last time I was on your show, I got 15 minutes of fame, and I think I'm on the 16th minute. So it's already.
There you go. All of us have our couple of minutes of fame. When it goes, I don't know. But, you know, good for you. You work hard. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I'm super thankful to Mr. Cohen, obviously. You know, it was an amazing thing. I did not know it was going to happen. So people were just blowing up my phone that day. So I didn't know what was happening. I was home with my kid and my phone was blowing up. So I had to search somebody else's direct DM. Someone DM'd me before I even logged on to Twitter, and I found out about it from a DM, not even from the actual app, until I went on the rest of it on the timeline. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy stuff. Steve Cohen giving pub to a hardworking member of the independent media, and we need more guys like Ernie Dove. And let's start. I'm not going to mince words here. You know, you're a guy that, you know, connects with these prospects at a very early stage, and you stay connected with them. So you know them sometimes before any of us are even talking about them. So you could understand and appreciate the grind. We've talked about this on the show, the grind to get to the big leagues. So maybe I'm being hard on Beatty and Acuna and Mauricio and maybe a little bit of Vientos and Alvarez. But at some point, you know, the Mets are in the deep end of the pool. They're trying to win a championship. Let's not play games here and pretend, you know, the probabilistic outcome and everything like that. We know it's hard. So when you have a good portion of the roster, you know, four spots potentially, dedicated to homegrown talent that you're not even expecting to be maybe core answers. You're expecting to give you component-driven, derivative-driven results. And you see what Alvarez has produced. And now word has come out. The Pat Regazzo of SI said there was some debate that part of the real reason for sending him down was his defense. I have heard that they started a week ago moving him back to his old stance. I don't know if you could confirm that. And there's some work to be done on that. I understand he had a baby. That's a big deal. That takes a lot. Let's not dismiss the importance of that. I know he's got a job to do, but that's part of it. And look, the Hammett injury, and I said this in the spring when everyone said no big deal, is a big deal. That's a big deal injury, even though it heals. It sucks your power out. Your wrist is where everything comes from. With all that said, His level of play is unacceptable. I think, I don't know if they did it purposely. He had hollow stats last night in a game in Philadelphia, on Saturday night in Philadelphia. And, one of the biggest plays of the game was a ball that he just did not play well on Griffin Canyon that he should have blocked that cost them a run and could have cost them the game. So to me, I've been calling for Hayden Sanger to be called up because I think the kid has proven he can play defensively and as a backup catcher. Which is what Alvarez really is as a stat-driven, just put the stats in, forget about the name. I think Singer's a better play right now, and Alvarez should be in AAA figuring things out, and he should be there a while because I don't think his solutions are a 1 week to 10 day solution. I think he needs to have some serious soul searching, and I think he has to have some serious thoughts about what kind of player he's going to be and start to work on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, for me then too, the main issue obviously is defensively, because from the catcher position, he was supposed to be a guy I was predicting years ago. Maybe he hit one of those 250 average and then hit 30, 25, 30 bombs. Like from a catcher position, perfect. And then he was doing some good framing early on. But I was reporting from A-ball that he was literally kind of still learning how to catch in A-ball. So he was already doing the knee down thing in A-ball. And it was a work in progress. So, and I know he's a hard worker. The organization loves him. They love the personality. Some people are turned off by it, but the
Yeah.
organization loves it because they felt he'd be a fan favorite, which
He
technically,
is. Technically, he is. I think the smile and the goofiness bothers you when basic services are not happening.
Well,
And
that's
I think that's part of it. And maybe that's unfair, but that's life in the big leagues and in social on social media. And perception sometimes is something that maybe players have to understand is part of the ball game here. Maybe we're overrating it as radio hosts, but I
Yeah.
think the perception is I'm tired of the goofy smile. Get better, get serious. They're trying to win a championship. This is not, a scholarship in college, Danny. That's the issue. If it was a development team, I wouldn't care. I'd be
Yeah.
care, but I wouldn't care. Maybe again, I'm interrupting. I apologize, but this is a big deal. This is a big prospect, and the Mets have now not really done much outside of Alonso and McNeil with their offensive prospects. Let's face it. I mean, Vientos has a couple of months in there. This is a big deal. It's been a while for this team.
But it could also come down to their form of player development at the major league level now, at the 26-man level, because I talk about it all the time, obviously, incessantly on social media and reports and videos. But here you are at the major league level, and maybe I'm always Mets-centric. These guys come up for years. Conforto, Nimmo, and then when Bay, it seems like every time a Mets player comes up, they're never an everyday player. But then, by the way, look, last September, or Lindor goes down. Acuna, by force, by literal force, has to play every day, and he hits 300 and helps them get back into everything. Now, all of a sudden, he plays once a week and he's struggling. Now, I'm not just using that as an excuse because his hit tool overall, Luisanel Acuna, has been a struggle for a while, even in AAA. But again, the Mets organization, no matter who it is, Beatty will get a good week and then he sits. Mauricio comes up, plays 2, 3 days a week. Vientos, when he first came up before getting demoted, what, last year? Because they're not playing every single day. And then, oh wow, what a weird coincidence. Vientos is playing every single day through the playoffs, and he's basically Barry Bonds, which may never happen again. I don't know. But again, for all the players you mentioned that you're worried about, I don't know if the solution would be literally leave him in the lineup and be stubborn, because it's not working playing them part-time or trying to platoon them. It's a joke. A guy like Marte, he was able to platoon in April, May, and start getting hot now, but that could be a guy in his mid to late 30s who's a veteran and he's just settling into the season. But all these guys playing part-time, they're not part-time players. And I've seen it on social media, and honestly, I'm willing to agree with it. You get a team like the Braves, whether you hate them or not, when they call up somebody, he's playing every single freaking day, one way or another. And then some guys, they get hot, stay
Right.
hot. Maybe some
Right.
of them have slowed down now, but it this would
But to be
help.
fair, Ernie, Ozzie Albies hit, a Ronald Acuña hit. I mean, those are really good players. Austin Riley struggled. Yeah, he did, if you remember. And he got better. And maybe he could have been buried in a lineup a little bit. And maybe that's part of the problem, Ernie. Maybe because you really can't bury three or four of them. Let's face it. If Vientos is hitting and right now he's hurt, maybe you could have buried Beatty and played him at second a little bit. If everybody else is hitting, maybe Alvarez is playing good defense. And I guarantee you, if he's playing good defense, Ernie, Is he getting sent down today? No, he's not. Maybe he's not playing every day, but he's not sent down. I think the issue is the defense. I mean, nobody's saying it. It's not a coincidence that they decided to send him down after last night's game. That had to be that they know. Look, this is not rocket science. That was so critical, that missed block pitch. And who knows what the pitchers are saying? See, we don't know what the pitcher's saying. Pitchers might be saying, you know, I really don't like throwing him at this point. And they got this guy Torrens who's throwing people out, who's a veteran, and Singer, who they like probably throwing to in April. That could be playing into this. We don't know what's going on the back end.
Well, that's the thing too. Like pretending I'm young for a second, because I hate metrics and analytics, but like Senger through 13 games in major leagues is like an above a positive WAR player. When he hasn't seen him in forever, and he basically hit like .150 with like a 5-something OPS, and he has a positive WAR value because of how amazing his defense was. So that's the game that we're in. And then you know what? Honestly, as much as I love Alvarez, but for better or worse, Soto is back to being generational. There's other guys getting hot. McNeil, Marte, they're starting to be normal. Nimmo is starting to get some of his walks again, along with the power still being around. So with the offense starting to kick in here and there, now the pitching's the problem. So if this is one way they have to fix the problem by having Hayden Singer, who, by the way, I've mentioned this for a couple of years, minor league pitching teammates have loved him for probably 3, 4 years at least. They were talking about him from Double A that they just love throwing to him. That's never changed. So when you have good rapport, if me having Sanger hit .150 batting ninth is going to help the team possibly every day right now during the stretch run.
And I mean, the thing is, it's also about earning a position. And what drives me nuts, and this is more of a social media thing, I keep hearing about the 25 home runs from 2 years ago. I keep hearing about it. And I see this kid, Senger, who was, you know, organizational filler probably at this time last year. Nobody thought he'd be part of the solution. All he does is work. All he does is put time behind the plate. Again, he'll probably never hit better than Tomas Nito. But that's what Alvarez is right now. Like, take away the name, take away the top 100 prospect, take away all the hype, take away the home run off of the Orioles, take away 2023 and the 25 home runs, which most of them came before August 1st. And who is he? You put those stats up on the board on X, nobody's going crazy. And they'll probably take Singer and his defense 10 times out of 10, but because it's Alvarez. And you have to have a culture of accountability. At some point, you know, I hear he's 23. David Wright and Jose Reyes were established stars by they were 23. Let's face it. You know, people who are good and are actually worthy of not being shuttled, 23 don't matter to them. I mean, Austin Riley, you know, I'll bring him up real quick. Austin Riley came up. Austin Riley was 22 years old. You know, he struggled a little bit there. And then it was this COVID season. By 24 years old, he's seventh in MVP voting. Seventh. So you don't necessarily need 5, 6, 7 years and to get it done. That's my point. And then you mentioned, and I know this is a big topic about at the big league level, the development. Because since Pete and McNeil, there hasn't been a lot of development. There hasn't been a lot of development in general. You and I know that. And it's just getting better now with Stearns. So what is that? I keep hearing about Chavez and Barnes. Last I looked, and you know this, you deal with these guys. They all do. A hitting coach is there like a computer. You want to use it? Use it. You don't? You don't. They can't hold you at gunpoint and tell you what to do. If you think they're idiots and they're telling you something wrong, you are not obligated to listen to Eric Chavez. Now, is that going to hurt is that going to hurt you with the organization if you're a young player? Maybe. Francisco Alvarez does not have to listen to anybody. He just has to perform. And then if he doesn't, they'll decide whether they want to keep around. Am I off base here? Because I know I've had Hall of Famers telling me they never listen to the batting coach. Hall of Famers, that's coming from the horse's mouth. Now, those are guys who played 20 years ago, but still, you know.
Well, I mean, I know from a minor league perspective, there hasn't been many, but I've had things disclosed to me about minor league players and or their agents fighting with the organization about things like hitting approach and coaching and stuff like that. So if it happens at the minor league level, and again, I'm talking about even years ago when they were making about 1,100 a month. So these guys weren't even making below level 30,000, whatever now. Even when they were making 800 to 1,100 a month, they were guys who, again, even for that reason, it makes you want to dream harder. And they would fight with people even at that level. So it could definitely make sense to just say, well, okay, he's telling you to do something. And if it's not working, you just keep doing it. But I know there's the flip side of it on a positive way, because you know I'm going to spin it like I always do, but
Sure, I get it.
I know minor league players and pitchers and batters right now, they've revamped many things about their entire existence in the offseason and spring, and some of them are clicking right now and they're hot. So but that becomes all kind of things. When I have a coach tell me the word coachable, it's like the cliche term I've been hearing
Sure,
since last year.
sure,
When a guy
sure.
is coachable, kind, and hardworking, they
Right.
care about that as much as the player development itself.
Sure, and that goes without saying, but and here's the other thing about big league development. I think there's a nuance. Once you get promoted, there's an expectation of your team, like on the Mets or the Braves or the Yankees. And Clint Frazier was recently talking about this on a podcast about, the analytics and how he was treated as a Yankee, and maybe he didn't agree with the analytics team that plays into it. You're expected to perform in that role. Not everybody's going to be a starter. Dave Maggett, and I know I'm dating myself, was behind Keith Hernandez for what, 3.5 years before he got a full-time job. Probably hurt his career in the long run because he deserved to start. He was a Moneyball player before his Moneyball, but they kept giving the job to everybody but him because of various things. Then he goes on and nearly wins a batting title, and then he had a decent career, not the same one. So it's back in the, I hate to look, sound like an old fart, but back in like, even Cleet Boyers and guys like that, Brooks Robinson, they didn't just get handed positions. You had to earn them. There was no development at the big league, and we've gotten to the other side. Now, if you're the Colorado Rockies, if you're the Nats to a lesser degree, yeah, I get it. Play Woods all the time. Play CJ Abrams, but the Mets are not in that spot. And maybe that's where this is hard to do both, right? It's hard to do both at that point.
Well, that's the problem. Like for me, I'm all excited because like you have so much a high percentage of the 26 man is all homegrown players. Makes me smile. But again, like we just said, when you have four or five guys who don't even play every day, they play somewhat every day. And you even mentioned it about 10 minutes ago or whatever. Brett Beatty is playing two different positions. Why? When you have a former top 100 prospect, this and that, first round pick, he gets promoted. By the way, he gets promoted, demoted, promoted, demoted. And then when he's here, he's a utility player. You know what?
Right. I get it.
McNeil can do that, but guess what? McNeil has a batting title. He can hit a ball wherever he feels like. Not many players can do what a Jeff McNeil does. And that was my
Right.
concern last year with Vientos. I'm like, please stop playing him once a week. He doesn't have a hit tool.
But he wound up earning his spot. Like Vientos is a
But
perfect formula. He hit his way into, they had to play him. Yeah, Iglesias spotted him on defense stuff. But I think Vientos is the blueprint. If they do, if any of these guys, Beatty, who seemed like he was starting to, or Alvarez, or Acuna, or anybody, if you do what Vientos did a year ago, and then add the postseason in there, then that's it. Then nobody could ever take it away from you. And you're going to tell me Chavez and Barnes are dopes this year, but not last year with Vientos? Like, that's why I don't buy into the big league development. But maybe there's something to being the way that the Mets put a lot of pressure. Maybe this market, this team, maybe that is part. Is that true? Could that be something onto that?
I mean, it's always going to be something. They've said it for Beatty since last year. Like, oh, is it some of it in his head? Because the grind of being here, and if you go 0 for 4, you suck, you're trash, and everyone hates you in the New York market. And that's even the fans, let alone other teams and their
Sure.
fans. So I know it's not easy and for effort for everyone to even handle it. That's why some players end up not even wanting to be on the Mets or the Yankees or, certain teams. So that could always play into it, but you have guys that just love the limelight. I don't know if Acuña had to play 15 games in a row straight for 9 innings, I don't know what his slash line would be, but I would like to think it would be better than it is right now playing once a week and stealing bases.
Sure.
But again, when you have four or five of them, the Mets can't do this right now. And it's weird because the Mets, I have some of the info too, either way, but the entire Syracuse Mets roster looks like the movie Major League. There's a bunch of guys 28 to 33 on the roster. So they're going
Yeah.
at it at a whole different thing situation right now. But
Right.
part of me is kind of wondering, well, if you're going to do this and have your entire Syracuse team be like 30-year-olds, why is your Major League team full of 20-something-year-old guys who haven't developed yet and who can't handle being a part-time player? You might as well call up some of these older guys because at least
Like a Luke Ritter, like a Luke
Luke
Ritter,
and
and
I.
Jared Young felt, falls into that. Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
why not? Because I know, so a Luke Ritter, I love him because he's like a three outcome player. It is what it is. He's not Joey Gallo. He's not a Joey Gallo defensive player. But Luke Ritter can play three, four, five positions to the point of being able to play it like a Vientos-ish. So when you have a guy who can play multiple positions, he can hit as a 30 homer bat, technically, if you considered it over the course of 600 at bats. What Luke Ritter, I was thinking about it, he's almost like a right-handed version of DJ Stewart, who the Mets had. And again, you're gonna hit 200 and hit some bombs off the bench. So I'm thinking, why don't you have a Luke Ritter doing that rather than this recycled or shuffling of 3, 4, 20-year-olds who aren't playing every day and who aren't exceeding anyway for four at bats? It just makes no sense. Even like a Joey Meneses, who's been getting, unfortunately, his numbers are dying month to month, April, May, June. But you have guys like this, why aren't they up instead of these younger players? Because even I know everyone wants Drew Gilbert, and I'm the prospect guy, but Drew Gilbert, he doesn't strike out a lot, but he also doesn't hit a lot. So, and the power hasn't shown yet. So, and again, AAA, they keep saying it's more of a hitter's league, but you can't hit 220 in AAA and think you're getting called up because you have a good plate approach.
Well, I mean, if you play for the Pirates or a development team, maybe, or an analytics team, maybe. I mean, with the trade deadline about 6 weeks away, here's the problem, Ernie. And this is where, we're all smarting over Pete Carl Armstrong. Pete Carl Armstrong turned out to be Jared Kelnick. We'll see long term. Everybody cried about Jared Kelnick, but the guy that they drafted to replace Jared Kelnick is Jared Kelnick. And, who knows if he was here and he got off to the same hard start that he got to with the Cubs, same deal. Same deal. I'll use a basketball analogy. People always talk about the Knicks. Oh, if they only had drafted Steph Curry. Steph Curry had ankle problems for 3 or 4 years as a basketball player, his first 4 years in Golden State. No way he survives New York, always injured. No way. He doesn't get a chance. He gets that chance in Golden State. So maybe that's an analogy here with a Pete Carl Armstrong and guys like that. But let's be honest, not a lot is going to change between now and July 31st. Alvarez, I don't think they're going to trade him, but I'm not so sure Mauricio. Beatty, Acuna to me, take it or leave it. He's a backup. Probably that's where he's going to be a Terrence Gore runner and a really good versatile defender. I mean, he's a good defender, but I don't think he's ever really going to hit a lot. And there's some red flags where, you got Lindor saying the guy's bored. You're bored? Bored? You're fighting for a big league job. You can't be bored. I don't care if you're an Acuna. You can't. Your brother could be bored because he's wealthy and he's an all-star and he's good. I don't know if these guys are going to be on the roster in August. And honestly, I'm not saying give them away, but you can't turn down veteran deals that are going to make this team better in 25 to hold on to Beatty and Mauricio. I'm sorry, I think they're at a point where, and especially if Vientos hits, where's the fit for Beatty at this point? You got to make a decision. Where's the fit?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's going to be decisions anyway. I was saying it from last year, to be honest, speaking or questioning openly or whatever, rhetorically. Why are Mauricio, Beatty, and Vientos still in the Mets organization in 2025? Doesn't make sense to me, but again, same but different. Are we really going to do this again, like with the Dom Pete or the Ike Duda? We keep doing this over and over. And meanwhile, again, Braves or whoever, they put these guys in like a Michael Harris. I don't care if whatever you're going to do, you're playing every day. And they show off some kind of tool one way or another. Harris was defense. Albies was home runs early. Like, these guys are going to do what they're going to do one way or another. But again, how you have three guys basically play the same position, one or two or three, and they're all still just looking at each other, taking turns based on what? Analytics, lefty, righty.
Which
Great.
is what you do with veteran players,
Yeah.
which is what you do if you want to win. But yeah, I agree with you. Let's blanking it off the pot. Look, it with the options, it, they can do whatever they want with Beatty. They know that Beatty's not learning anything in AAA.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's improved immensely defensively. And you want to say, hey, you're trading him like Austin Riley didn't. I mean, keep using Austin Riley as an example. He was 24 when he figured it out.
Yeah.
Beatty's what, going to be 24 shortly. That's fine. I think there's something to be said. I think they're going to have to make a decision here. They have to be honest. Is Vientos their future DH? Do they want to, who has a little bit of field flexibility because he can actually play a position where a Kyle Schwarber at this point can't, those kind of DHs, Jesse, JD Martinez couldn't, things like that. Acuna, I don't know if you could, why would you just give him away? But he's a utility guy. Mauricio, you might be able to add as part of a package and get something. That's an interesting name. I mean, guy can't hit an off-speed pitch. And I know he just came back from a serious injury, but I mean, Peter Fabregas, I keep going that. I mean, that tells you a guy's not ready. That at bat, he was done. He was no. That's the kind of pitchers that tell me whether a guy has something. And I understand he's young, but when you're competing for a championship, I can't have a guy like that up in the ninth inning that's a guaranteed out against a good slider. I can't, just can't. I mean, I know I'm being hard, but I'm dealing it from the deep end of the pool of where the Mets are right now, and I don't want to hurt the future. But I also know that there's not only so many times that you can, and you got guys like Pete in his 30s, Soto, clock, you know, clock will tick. He'll be 30 in a blink of an eye. Like you can't keep giving these seasons away. I know the fans don't look at that, especially the younger fans. But, you know, I'm 48, man. You become 50 quick, and 25 years goes by. 2000 seems like yesterday, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, look at that. So maybe I'm being selfish too.
Well, no, I mean, I could see, you know, some of the stuff, and I'm trying to also read between the lines what's happening right now in the Mets organization, kind of repeating myself. But with all these veterans in AAA, they kind of want them to be the older guys to shove up and down. But here's the other thing, for better or worse, and no disrespect to anyone on that roster, there's a handful, if not more than a handful, of guys who can be DFA'd and released tomorrow to make room. So
Sure.
when you mention guys like Beatty or Mauricio or Acuna, when you and Alvarez, when you have all these young guys who can all technically be optioned, guess what? There's plenty of room on Syracuse one way or another if you need to either bring someone up or deadline. If the trade deadline, the Mets could technically acquire two, three, four, five people at the deadline, because guess what? They have enough four, five, six people off the 26 man to option. And then you could also release the veterans on Syracuse. There might be things that are reading the tea leaves, because obviously these are the smart people who earn their money. That's probably what they're doing. Because right now, there's a lot of promotions going on within the minor leagues right now. It might still be going on while we're talking. A lot of people getting promoted up the levels. When I started asking around at the AA level, hey, who's getting called up to AAA? I think I just got a stop sign. And I think one of the reasons why I'm hearing that stop sign is because we ain't got no room. And the reason why you don't have room is because they might be saving the room, people. Because just like you think of it, really good organizations, when you call up a top prospect, you don't want them to leave, right? So even on the other levels, you don't want to call up a top five prospect to AAA and then risk demoting him again, even if he doesn't deserve it. So I'm starting to read the tea leaves right now, and now I'm forcing my own opinion. No one has told me it as fact. But now that I'm hearing even tiny rumblings literally an hour ago, thinking a few people probably aren't going to get promoted this weekend with some of the other moves, that's my opinion of what's happening. I think Stearns, one way or another, is going to keep certain things open. And again, I've said it publicly, I think that's one of the reasons why Nolan McLean isn't already in Queens. It's because they're going to need that 40-man spot to do what they're doing. Two pitchers at a time are getting scooped up and down. You can't call up a McLean, because what if he does great? What if he doesn't do great? Now you got to
Now he's
send
on the
him
40
back.
man, and now the clock
That's it.
starts. He's got big league insurance. Like there's also like there's all the other things. When you call him up, you're right. You want him to be right. Now I've complained about Beatty. I've complained about Mauricio, and we've spent a lot of time on Alvarez. But to be positive, I mean, Blake Treadwell showed some moxie on Friday night. Fastball, it hurt his sliders really filthy. We've seen it. Maybe a bullpen arm. Maybe he's a guy they could shuttle out of the bullpen instead of going and getting the next, you know, Adcock or Garza or something like that. You mentioned McLean. Jonah Tong is doing what he does. He's not an option for this year. Everybody talks about Sproat, who's been struggling, especially against lefties in the minors. Pitching wise, who can help? Is Tidwell somebody that you see as maybe gets you something in a trade, kind of like how Tyler Stewart got you your boy? You've talked about him before on X, how you were big on him and high on him, and he brought them Jesse Winker. You know, maybe similar to how Eric Orsi and Paul Gervasi, I mean, guys that now are probably going to go and be good relievers in Tampa, they brought back the Mets some value in Siri and Phil Maton and things like that. So, you know, who's a solution in your opinion? And who can you see this year, and who's probably going to be trade bait? Because the Mets are going to be active, from what I understand, at the deadline. I don't think they're going to sit on their hands and collect prospects. At least I don't think, unless you heard differently.
Yeah, and I think the Mets are finally, in my opinion, being creative by finally transitioning a few starters to relievers in the minor leagues. But here's the thing. Now we're getting mixed results because one of the exciting things that I was happy about from my minor league perspective in the last month or so was left-handed pitcher Felipe De La Cruz and then Dom Hamill were both quietly moved full-time into the bullpen in Syracuse. Now, here are the things that can naturally happen, unfortunately. De La Cruz started to struggle to the point of now being demoted back to double A. Dom Hamill still looks like the inconsistent Dom Hamill from the last couple of years. So he's just doing it now over one point something to three innings rather than five, six. So the consistency hasn't been there because I've been wondering. Because again, now Felipe De La Cruz is a lefty who can throw 97. So, and then you have Dom Hamill, who's always been told about elite stuff, but not consistent. I've been hoping if you move guys like that to a one or two inning reliever, I thought they would be options right now or in the second half. But one
Sure.
got demoted, one's inconsistent. So, what's next? You can keep bringing back Blade Tidwell. And again, Tidwell, I have him as a higher version of Dom Hamill. Tidwell will go 5 innings, 1 run, 11 Ks, and then next outing, 3.2, 4 walks, 4 runs. The consistency, we haven't seen it. And it seems like people were mentioning Tidwell has now shortened his delivery, hoping maybe that'll also help with the command. He was looking good overall. I'm trying to explain it away on his defense. If that inherited runner doesn't score, 1 run in 3 2/3 in a spot start, it's kind of helpful. It has value. I could see them keep continuing to shuttle him back and forth. I think he has the ability and talent. As for Sproat, again, my information is that Brandon Sproat is learning certain pitches, changes to his arsenal. He's now being a sinker thrower. He's a sinker guy, so he's not just trying to throw 100 and get a high K rate. Now he's got the sinker, K rate's down, but it looks like the hits are coming. The refinement to his two-seamer isn't perfect yet. He's just not ready. So all I can really say at this point is we're going to keep seeing the same people. My favorite, Deadneil Nunez. Waddell, I think, did what he does. More shutout innings in Syracuse, I believe, today. He's going to be a guy to shuttle. Right now, we basically have shuttle guys.
Yep.
Still,
Is
the
Nunez a
actual
guy
number.
that I was high on him? Are you what do you see? Why the command struggles? Why is it from the owner issue? Is there something else going on? Like, he's been a big disappointment because I saw him as a possible like a core reliever or backup closer or future closer after last year's performance.
Wait, for which pitcher?
Nunez, Daniel Deadneil Nunez.
I mean, I know for years it was only injury related. So now he's healthy. It's just the consistency of his command. Because again, Nunez is one of those familia guys, or even like a lower version of Diaz. You never know when he's going to go an entire inning not getting that movement pitch close enough to the zone to get strikes and then swing.
Right.
That's the only thing with Nunez. His ball has been moving for years. And I remember it used to be 92 to 94 in A ball. Now he's throwing 96, 98. And again, the movement is ridiculous. I don't know how you ever fix like a Brazoban. Again, Brazoban will be one of the best pitchers in baseball. Then he gives up runs for a couple of days with walks. And then he gets back to himself the other night. This could be Deadneil Nunez's entire career based on the movement of his pitches. I don't know how you
Right.
can. And as far as one thing about the Mets system, I don't know how soon. The only guy who could possibly be the soonest to help would be a Dylan Ross. But the Mets right now quietly are developing closers. I don't know who's going to make it, if any, but you have Ramon Gomez, who threw 104.5 miles an hour this year. You got Dylan Ross, who clicks it up to about 102. And then you have Ryan Lambert, who I think is at least 99 to 100. But again, Gomez is an A ball, high A, trying to get his command right. Dylan Ross just got a cup of coffee in Syracuse. He's not ready. Which, by the way, Dylan Ross has an amazing splitter. So forget the 102. His splitter might get him to the majors. And then you have Ryan Lambert. I believe he did pretty good today, about 1.2 innings, scoreless in double A for Binghamton. We might have closers on our hands, or at least eighth, ninth inning guys to actually call up from within rather than find these guys off the waiver wire. So that's exciting. But again, you want answers about 2025. I have to keep telling you, we're recycling guys unless it's deadline and we acquire them.
Gotcha. Ernie Dove joining me. So, well, as we wrap up here, some prospect news and Colin Houck, 2023 first round pick, awful start to his career, just got a promotion. We were talking before the segment. You've said there's some good reports on him. Again, if the Mets are going to be acquiring some assets at the deadline, hate to be the bearer of bad news for you, Ernie. Maybe that's a good thing for the Mets to be able to pitch a fourth round pick as part of a deal. Who is what's percolating in the minors? Guys that are starting to get some attention. Maybe they'll be part of the solution or be here in a year or two. Maybe not. Maybe they're part of a deadline trade. Any names that you want the listeners to know about that maybe they're not paying attention to right now, outside of the obviously McClain and the guys that everybody says, come on, I want them here now.
Yeah, I mean, I could try to talk about some of the higher ranked guys that people would mostly know about. Jett Williams has been consistent all year. And again, though, he's in double A. Is he being stuck in double A because of all the veterans that they have in Syracuse? I mean, we'll see. As we speak, there's a bunch of promotions going on. We just heard that the was last year's first round pick, Carson Benj, just got promoted to double A. So now he's going to be joining who? Because there's already a lot of outfielders in Binghamton, by the way, especially when you've had Jett trying center field. You have Nick Morabito, the speedster, playing center field. Now you have Carson Benj getting promoted, reportedly. So someone's got to go. And I know there's the former top prospect, Alex Ramirez. He's been struggling for years now. They have to
Years.
unfortunately pull the cord on a Ramirez. But again, Carson Benj could be that guy. I don't know about all-star stuff. That's just projecting and trying to hype fans. But Carson Benj now, considering him a college bat, getting to double A by June 2025, he could be in the mix next year. And he's a lefty who can go oppo. I love opposite field hitters naturally who can walk. From a younger perspective, you have AJ Ewing who steals a lot of bases, and he's been hitting a lot this year. And again, Colin Houck, I would hate for them to trade him already while he's hot, but the word on the street with Colin Houck was he spent the offseason and spring kind of revamping his plate approach, plate discipline, the whole barreling metrics, hard hit, exit velocity thing. He's been working on it the entire offseason, and it looks like it took until June for everything to start clicking, and now he's taking off. He also looked like a Pedro Serrano with a breaking ball, but again, now he's hitting over 320 in June. Some things are starting to click for Colin Houck. That's a former first round pick. And again, at the higher levels, Nick Morabito, with his speed, I don't know how to consider him. Can he be a the Timu version of like Harrison Bader, maybe? There's things with value for a Nick Morabito.
I like that, the team version. That's a did you want to coin that one there, Ernie Dove? That's an interesting
It's
one.
either
Look,
that or the Harrison Bader 2.0, maybe sounds
Harrison Bader
better.
2.0. Yeah, look at that.
We have the streaky Ryan Clifford. Again, Ryan Clifford can hit a ball to the moon, but is he also a three outcome player? Is he the future Joey Gallo without the defense? I don't know, but he's starting to hit more home runs now in June. He walks like crazy because I don't think people want to pitch to him. He's physically imposing, Ryan Clifford. If you see him stand next to like Jett, Acuna, and Drew Gilbert, I kind of smile when I saw them in camp standing next to each other because it looks like a guy with his kids. That's how big Ryan Clifford is compared to everyone else.
Big
But
boy.
again, he's streaky. So he'll go 2 for 4, 3 for 4, and then go 0 for 8, and then go 2 for 4. I don't know how
But
to.
hitters like that are those guys like the profile like that, that's who they are.
Yeah.
That's who they are. I mean,
I do.
have to be a little bit fair too. You also have, I think part of the issue is that we talk about these kids. Remember, Wilmer Flores was talked about since he was 16 years old.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
think about what is that? 2007, he came into the organization. We're almost 20 years in. We've been talking about Wilmer Flores in some way, shape, or form. Now he's an established big leaguer and what have you. So sometimes, because of that, we get these expectations, these comps,
Yeah.
and you know better than anybody the odds of success And you know, if you want to take any draft, just go to Baseball Reference, go to any draft from any year from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 10 years ago, whatever. Look at the first round picks. Look who turned out to be anywhere near a big league club. Look who turned out to be anywhere near a regular. Look how many people turned out to be stars or elite. It's small. And I'm not trying to pick on these guys. I'm just this idea that we're kind of like just going to sit back and wait for them to figure out. And the Mets just can't do that. I mean, look, the Phillies, Alec Baum is an example. He went through a lot over there at third base, right? He kind of, you know, it takes time, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe there's too many of them. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's, you know, maybe there's too many of these kids, and maybe the Mets just have to make the decision at the deadline. Who's going to be the guy that's just going to ride it out? Alvarez, I think, is definitely one of them. And then it's a matter of Vientos and Beatty and Mauricio. I think, I mean, this idea that you could let Pete Alonso walk now to put Vientos at first. And imagine if you did that. They're blanked, for lack of a better word. They're blanked.
Well, that's also that's a fan base thing too. Like by the
Well,
month,
the media, too.
you
The media
know.
plays that up, too. Oh,
Well,
well, you
yeah,
know.
it's just even on the fan base and my fellow minor league junkies. Like, if Clifford goes on a hot streak where he's hitting 320 with like five homers in a month, and then Alonso sucks for like 3 weeks, they're like, we already have our replacement. Let him walk, Steve. And that was before he won the playoffs last year. So they were already
Right.
calling him the replacement, whether it's him or Vientos. So this is how these things go. Even there's always going to be somebody's going to replace everyone by the week, by the day, by the at bat, depending on who you
Right.
want to listen to on social
Right.
media. It kind of is what it is, but I still agree with you that one way or another, you can't have like five of these guys out of 26 all trying to figure it out and not even actually playing all the time anyway. It's not going to work. You might as well swap out at least two of them for these 30-year-olds at Syracuse who at least know their role. And
Right.
again, Senger is not a veteran of sorts, but he's a veteran in age, but he can come in and do his job. And that's why I talk about, can you have a Luke Ritter who might go one for four with three strikeouts, but if he hits one home run in the game, nobody's going to care about the strikeouts, especially if he only played once that week. Like with the DJ Stewart, he's our favorite player. Give him a contract extension because he went like three for nine with three homers. Is that what Luke Ritter can do? Maybe. But again, why not do that rather than the 23-year-old, 24-year-old who's a platoon player playing three different positions in this month, and you can't do anything perfect. And they're all getting yelled at. They all suck. They all bust, fire, and release everyone. It's going to take a toll on everybody during a division title playoff run. It's not going to work that way. But again, Stearns might make this decision in the form of trade deadlines, and these guys are either going to be traded or in Syracuse by late July anyway.
One last thing before we wrap up. Do you believe the media hype, more not media hype, maybe more fan and social media hype of the Mets, and you mentioned maybe development at the big league level? Do you think if their woes with runners in scoring position continue, if their woes with the kids learning how to hit continues, should they move on from Chavis and Barnes? Should they do something, i.e., the Mets did in 1999 and fire the coaches to spark them up? Even though I think that that really elite offensive team would have been elite if Tom Robson was the hitting coach or Mickey Brantley at that point.
But again, okay, it would be you're kind of making a statement for show, to be honest.
Sure.
Although the Mets, it depends on it what can leak, because I've been saying this for years. You know how nothing really leaks anymore out of the Mets organization since Steve Cohen took over? Everyone can pretend that anything they want, but nobody really knows information in true transactions and trades and signings until like hours
Look at
before.
Alvarez. Everyone's shocked. Yeah, everyone's shocked. Alvarez, no one knew what was going to happen till Sunday morning. That's the reality.
That's
Till
the way
Sunday.
they are. So we would honestly not know if there's any kind of quote unquote infighting between managers, coaches, whatever, front offices. I will say this, Steve Cohen is not he's not micromanaging, by the way, if anyone needed to know or hear that. This isn't the Wilpon era, okay? Everything is delegated to Stearns, who's being paid a lot of money. He's in charge. We can talk about the mega contracts. Yeah, if you're gonna give a guy almost $1 billion, pretty much every owner in sports wants to be part of that conversation, but outside of like Soto and the Max and Verlanders of the last few years and the Lindor dinner, that's different. Outside of that, Everything is delegated to the front office and lower. So we wouldn't know if there is infighting, but even if there is, you're telling me what? That was like, I remember the people. I won't make names because people get mad at me when I do it on social media. There's people that
Sure.
wanted Hefner fired. And it was like, this is what we're dealing with as a fan base. So when you want
Right,
Hefner
right.
fired, when you see what's happening and what he's done to certain pitchers, it just, all you can do is say forget it at some point and give up. So,
Yep.
I'm not saying keep everyone. It wouldn't be shocking if they decided to part ways. Although, I don't know, in the middle of a season, what are you doing? Is there the assistant guy or someone they really like? I mean, me personally, I like some minor league pitching coaches because I communicate with them. So,
Right.
hello, that's a bias. So,
Sure.
I had one of the coaches tell me, we feel we have a dream team. So, but that's a coach believing in himself and his coworkers. So they feel like they love what they have from the minor league perspective, but I don't know if that means promote the coach to the majors. And maybe that could help.
Sure.
When you have a guy like Jacob Reimer, who's like the poster child of the hitting lab, because I think he's credited the hitting lab for his season, which, by the way, Jacob Reimer, who I believe per Daniel Wexler on social media, Reimer just got promoted to double A. And he's basically was having an MVP season until about 2 weeks ago when he started slumping a bit, but the walk K rate is okay. So maybe the ball's not bouncing. He's a poster child for analytics in the lab. There's stuff developing. Do you fully credit the staff? Should they be promoted to the major leagues? Is that going to help Juan Soto do anything different? You know,
Yep.
Lindor, McNeil, does he listen? Is Pete Alonso going
Sure.
to hitting 400?
Pete Alonso is going to do what he wants to do. He doesn't need, if that hitting coach, see, other than, hey, could you take a look at this video?
Well,
You
yeah.
know, people even remember with the pitching coach, and I'm a bigger pitching coach guy than hitting coach guy. R.A. Dickey won a Cy Young when Dan Worthen, who I thought was an awful pitching coach, was the pitching coach. I never was a fan of Dan Worthen. I thought that the Mets were behind, and he being a old school pitching coach, I think didn't help those young starters. That's Mike Silva talking out Ernie Dove, by the way.
Yeah.
R.A. Dickey just needed Worthen to look at video for him. That's it. He didn't change him. R.A. Dickey turned himself into a Cy Young Award winner. And I think there's a lot of players like that. And I think my point with the young players is it's going to come from them. They're going to have to figure this out. There's resources, there's labs, there's all this stuff that a team can provide, which is huge. Look at all the
Right.
guys that have gone on to Houston. Gerrit Cole, he became this next level pitcher in Houston. You want to say it's because of Spider Tack? Okay. But it was because he and Verlander went there and they opened their eyes to something. You know, that didn't mean they had to do it. They did it because they were sold it and they believed in it. But it was still them that made the decision. And I think that's the misinterpretation that a lot of the fans have. It comes down to the player at this point, you know?
Well, again, too, the minor leagues, at least pitching wise. When I'm saying many minor league pitchers have literally revamped their pitches, guys have gone from the sweeper to the hard slider. Guys are ditching their four seam for a two seam. Guys are going to a cutter. There's different forms of changeups now. Tong throws the Vulcan change. One of my favorite pitchers, Zach Thornton, throws the kick change, which is I think the Holmes changeup. Everyone's got something that's been going on different this year, and a guy like Zach Thornton, who's an absolute strike thrower, I think he's allergic to a pitch out of the zone. So when you have certain guys who can throw everything in the strike zone, that's going to help. But you know, and then you have a guy like Jack Weininger. I believe he also is now more of a two seamer than a four seamer. Jack Weininger's fastball is now touching 97. It was like 92 to 94 last year. Who gets credit? Weininger, the coach, both? There's a great relationship between last year's low A and high A pitching coaches are now the high A and double A pitching coaches. So there's relationships that's been building right now in the minor league system. Good handoffs, good analytics, because these guys are more analytically driven now than they were pre-Steve Cohen. So there's a lot going on and changes in the minor leagues. I just don't know at the major league level, do you just shove some guy up because he has your mindset? But I would assume the major league coaches have the same mindset as the Stearns front office, otherwise they wouldn't be here. So, but
Right,
again, let's
absolutely.
fire the
Is
hitting
there
coach.
one? I know I said one last.
Yeah, go
Let's
ahead.
fire one. Oh, I got to ask you this one on the way out.
All right.
Anybody you think is gonna be a impact reliever? I'll use Jabba Chamberlain type impact reliever. Is that McClain before the year is out?
I love the idea of it, and I've been kind of spreading it out there for no reason. If it's kind of one of those things like last year, the miracle spark of an Acuña, do Mets go that route? September, there's no games anyway, right? In the minors. What if you call up Nolan McClain? I don't care what he does. Make him starter, reliever, eighth inning guy. He's not losing any development when Syracuse season ends anyway. So what if they just sit on their hands, do what they need to do at the deadline, but come September, I think the Mets, I don't think it would be shocking if the two players called up in September are both minor league prospects and top prospects in the organization. I don't think it could just be a matter of some guy getting healthy, which, again, knock on wood, maybe that's going to have to happen at the end of the year. But if everybody's healthy, what if you call up a Nolan McClain? What if you call up someone who's getting hot? I don't know if it's going to be. Can Drew Gilbert, who's doing okay-ish without big numbers, can they start jumping by September? Can it be McClain and Drew Gilbert? I think that would be exciting. I know everybody wants Jett Williams, but Jett Williams was a high school draft pick, okay? This isn't Michael Conforto going from like Oregon in his 20s and just
Sure.
jumps from A ball to the majors. It's a little bit different. Now again, if Jett Williams showed up tomorrow in the major leagues, would there be a huge gap in difference between him and Acuña? Probably not, except for the defense, because Acuña is leaps and bounds better in defense. But offensively and speed, I don't think there would be a huge difference if you called him up right now to play once or twice a week and steal bases. And he could still play second, short, and center field for innings at a time. So you could technically jump him or at least call him up in the second half. Those are the top
Right.
prospects that could, I could see it not shocking if they're in the majors at least for September.
Right. Well, listen, what do you got coming up over the Ernest Dove New York Mets Ernest Dove report? Let the listeners know at Ernest Dove on X. What do you got coming up?
The main thing I coming up for my YouTube channel, the New York Mets Dove Report. I've been working out some logistics. I did recently interview Jack Weininger, one of the top prospects in the organization. I've already have lined up at least two more pitching prospects and a coach that I have set up to start interviewing. So if you can continue to follow me on social media on X, if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, be on the lookout for more player or coach interviews. They're going to be about 15 minutes out of respect per organization request. So they're going to be short and sweet, and you'll get to know more information about some of the people in the organization overall in the minor leagues.
Well, Ernie, this has been great, spirited debate. And I'm the old fogey that believes in winning championships and trading prospects. But you need guys like you, especially guys who procure this information at a very early time in the minors, to balance guys like me out, or else we have a bunch of lunatics running around trading Pete Crow Armstrong for Javier Baez. And maybe you have one championship, but you have a lot of pain in between. So I
Well,
appreciate the time here, and we'll do this again, all righty?
sounds good, man.
That's Ernie Dove. Check him out on X at Ernest Dove. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back and wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. I want to thank Ernie Dove for joining me there. Great segment. I thought we had some great back and forth, and Ernie always gives you little nuggets, little tidbits, 40-man roster machinations, his take on development, and things of that nature. So really interesting. And look, I think the one thing we all could agree on, if you're listening to this audience and you're not as hardened about prospects and how I'm more about, hey, you got to earn your spot. I'm not about scholarships or development. If you earn your, you're on the roster, if you're the backup, you do as best as you can in a backup role. You contribute to a team in a winning way. That's how you get yourself a position. And whether you're a top 100 prospect or Hayden Singer, who's, a guy that's battling even to be in the organization. If you contribute in that role that you have at that point and excel at it, you'll get another role and you'll graduate to the next role. And then before you know it, you're a starting player and maybe you're a star. It does happen. I mean, the league is littered with guys like that over the years. And I think we've gotten into this, because everything is about analytics and data and one and zero and computers and whatnot, that, and I'm as much about data as anybody, that ultimately it's this linear progression where you come in, you get developed, you become a top whatever prospect, and once you're, labeled something, okay, now you've earned that spot in the big leagues and you just got to get time to develop. And then it's if the player does it, it's the player and how good they are. But when the player fails, it's the organization or it's the hitting coaches or whatever. And that's BS. All these things, labs, hitting coaches, technology, everything in front of these players are tools and resources. They don't build a house. The player builds the house. He puts all that together. Now, if you want to say the Mets aren't providing the right tools, the right infrastructure versus other teams, that's been a fair point. I don't think that's the case now. It's a matter of the players taking those tools, taking that information, taking those resources, and ultimately just playing better and playing like they're capable of. What Alvarez did 2 years ago means nothing. What Beatty did in high school means nothing. The potential, the physique, all the things that we look at with Mauricio mean nothing if they don't produce. And if the Mets don't win, it ain't going to mean nothing. Because what they give you right now, I could pluck a lot of people out of a lot of organizations, put them in that spot, and they can give you the same thing. And a lot of them weren't even sniffing top 100 prospect lists. Look at the guy that's the backup catcher right now, Hayden Senger. He wasn't. Anyway, we'll see. Mets, Braves this week. Then they go to Pittsburgh. Continue to check me out over at the newsletter. We'll do more content and videos and written content throughout the week. And I want to thank everybody. I want to thank again Ernie Dove for joining me today. You can check me out, as I said all the time, at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And like I said, don't forget the newsletter. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can get great premium content in addition to the show. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody. Meet the Mets. Head for the